Well, I've wrecked every single car I've ever had, and that's been quite a few. I've been incarcerated from coast to coast. I've been in and out of treatment centers all my life, from the age of 16 to now. 9 treatment centers in my life. I've had 13 DUIs. Pretty much hurt everybody that I came in contact with. I used them for my own selfish gain. I multiple relapses. You know, through them treatments, I didn't listen to what people were telling me. I say, okay, I'm going to give up alcohol, but I can smoke weed. I'm going to give up weed, but I can take pills. Never really giving up everything. Always hanging on to that little bit of something. And one day I came home from work, and my mom confronted me. And I went off on her. I threw her up against the wall, put my fist through the wall, and cussed her up and down. And her crying and looking in my eyes and saying, son, I see the devil in your eyes. And something that day hit me when she said that. After all the mess that I've been through and done, that hit me. And her, at the point of calling the police to get me out of her house, called my grandmother instead. And she coming over to the house and talking me down. And sitting on the front porch of her house, she's saying, son, do you want help? And I said, yes, ma'am, I do. And she says, well, the only person that can help you is Jesus. And I thought to myself, yeah, I've tried everything else out there, because at that point I've tried every treatment center or every treatment they offer, psychiatrists, jails, nothing was working. I've tried everything but God. And I said, yeah, I would like to try. So she contacted Drug Alternative Program and put me in touch with Cliff and Freddie Harris, which are the directors of the program. And I did a phone interview. He accepted me over the phone. He says, if you want to get here, you need to come right now. At the time, the program was 12 months. I was ready for help. But I knew nothing about God. The first morning I was here, I was hungover, and they were having worship in the house, and they asked me to pray out loud. I thought I was going to die. I never barely prayed myself, let alone pray out loud in front of 12 people. But I did it, and I survived.
Welcome to Unhooked. My name is Pastor Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Kitty, and today we're going to be talking about relapse from addictions.
And we have some terrific guests here today. We're thankful that we have Dr. Mickey Ask and Dr. Sandra Brooks. Welcome to the program. Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, can you tell us, what is relapse? What is that phenomenon called relapse?
To me, it would be a reoccurrence of the original problem. So you had a problem, had a remission or a quiescent period. You weren't manifesting the symptoms. You were doing well. And then something happens, and now you're back into the problem.
Can there be different levels of relapse, so emotional or physical, or?
It can start internally, so spiritually, emotionally, relationally, and then finally come out. So it's rare that it's an out of the blue sort of thing. There's usually a ramp effect. There's usually something that's going on early on where they aren't as connected as they were with other people, or their success. They were doing well, and so they thought, I guess I'm over this now, and they have all the toys back, and everything seems to be going well, but there's no real balance. There's no spiritual balance in their life. So, I can start inwardly.
Mm-hmm. So speak to that a little bit. How do you slip back into these addictive behaviors? How do they slide back into relapse, after being sober for a while?
Well, a big part of recovery is self-care, learning how to take care of yourself and live, like Dr. Ass said, a balanced life. And so sometimes, we may feel like everything's okay and, start doing too much, stop taking time to really reflect on life, to meditate. Sometimes just not being able to deal effectively with the stresses in one's life can also lead to relapse.
We had a patient that the counselor said, you should develop a hobby, get something, some interest that you can relax with. So he took up kite flying, but then he brought his addictive self to that, and now he had to have the best kite and be the best at it, and so then it became another obsession.
So there's little triggers. What are some of the maybe environmental triggers or pitfalls or some of the ways that you might fall back into your addiction?
Some can be innocent issues, just normal everyday activity. There was this one mother that she'd had a cocaine problem, but now changing her baby's diapers, just seeing the talcum powder, reminded her of that cocaine that she had been using. So there's these associations in the brain that can remind us. So having some humility about that, not being cocky that, oh no, I'll never use. That could never happen to me. I'm strong. I know better now. But having some humility and realizing that it needs to be an ongoing, active program, staying connected to people and to God, and doing the footwork. So if you're going to choose to build a screen door in a submarine, you know, you can't pray that God's going to protect you from getting wet. So you got to do the footwork and work together.
You both were talking about that sense of self and being aware of yourself, and that perhaps you might overestimate your ability to handle your recovery. Can you talk a little bit more to that?
So I had one patient that I asked him, so what happened? Why did you relapse? And he talked about just going to the grocery store on the way to the vegetables. He chose to walk through the liquor section just to kind of reminisce about the past and the good parts. And so eventually he took longer and longer and eventually then got tempted enough that he bought alcohol. So when I always like to ask people, so do you think you'll drink again? And if they're too emphatic, then I'm worried about that. It would be like if I said, are you going to get a flat tire again? What would be a good answer? Well, so hopefully they would have some humility. Well, maybe it's possible, but then here's my plan on how I can lessen those chances. So they should have a relapse prevention plan, be mindful of what some triggers are, some internal cues as well as external cues, and then have thought out, what can I do if those triggers occur? Who can I call, carrying numbers around, getting to extra meetings, if it's a holiday situation or an anniversary issue where something occurred that's particularly stressful. So again, it's really about having humility.
Yeah, I've heard it said that relapse is a part of recovery. Is there any truth to that notion?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, as Dr. Ask was saying, a lot of people think, you know, when they're in the process of recovering, like, I'll never, ever use again, or if that's what they want to believe. But unfortunately, a lot of people actually do relapse. So it's important that you think about, you know, what you can do consciously to prevent that relapse and know that, you know, if you happen to fall, that you can get back up again. It's not all or nothing. You know, sometimes people tend to have black and white thinking. But there's something that addicts say often, which is, it's acceptable for me to make a mistake as long as I can learn from it and change my behavior. And so, you know, part of that relapse prevention is knowing that, you know, I can change if I, you know, take stock of what I've done wrong and then go from there.
Any good idea can be misused, so you don't want to say, oh yeah, relapse is part of recovery, and so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So you don't want to excuse it that way, but it's really dealing with the shame and the guilt that occurs when people do relapse. Mm-hmm. And you say, okay, you relapsed. It can be a part of your recovery, but let's talk about what you learned from that. Where did that start? Where did it begin so that we can learn from it to prevent it from happening again?
How does the addict deal with this, you know, they fail, they relapse. How do they deal with, you know, now here I am again, and I got to get back up, I got to get back into this thing? I mean, emotionally, mentally, doesn't it just sort of, you know, knock them out to some degree?
Yeah, as you can imagine, it's, you know, a devastating thing when you've done all this work to try to get yourself sober and then you fail. And so, again, it does take humility to be able to say, you know what, here I am again, I need help. You know, I need to go back to and start at the beginning in some ways.
Good.
It's a problem we all struggle with as perfectionists. We hate making mistakes. So being okay with that, it's okay to learn. It's okay to fail as long as we learn and to not beat ourselves up.
Yeah, and to get back up and get back
in there. So the righteous man falls seven times, and rises again.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
I embraced the program. It gave me discipline, structure, which pretty much I'd never had in my life. I was happy. You know, even though I had to go through dealing with the pain of all the stuff that I had done in my life, after I dealt with that, I felt free. I felt a burden lifted. And I had a whole year clean, and that was just unheard of. It was all new to me, and I had God in my life, and that was all new to me. You know, I graduated in 2000 and started working for the program, and I was lawn crew supervisor and house manager, and for about 2 years. Throughout this time, I injured my back. I had a bulging disc, and it was causing me a lot of pain. And I knew that I shouldn't mess around with it, but I did it anyway, and I started taking pain medication. And that's where my downfall went. God took a back seat. I was playing the game, playing the Christian, looking good on the outside, but not on the inside. I had three doctors going at one time, getting prescriptions from them. I knew how to play the game. I'd done it for so many years, I knew what to do. I worked my way up to assistant director of the program. So, you know, I got off work one Friday and went straight to the liquor store, got me a fifth of Jack Daniels, went and got a porno, a pack of cigarettes, and a 12-pack of beer. And went home, proceeded to get wasted. And you know, I'm here to tell y'all, you know, once you relapse, it gets 10 times worse. I mean, you not only go back to where you left off when you got clean, but it's 10 times worse. But that day I did that, I decided to call Cliff and Freddie up, Mr. and Mrs. Harris, and drunk. I don't know what made me do it. It's just the guilt or I just, because at that time I was using pills probably for almost a year and still working here. Then he says, well, I can't keep you on. Give me your keys and the credit cards. And so that devastated me. Somebody actively using can't work for a drug program, you know. So I hit the streets of San Bernardino, started using methamphetamines real heavy. Started intravenously shooting it. Went down fast with that. That's a pretty horrific drug. It sucked the life right out of me. I was staying up weeks at a time. Got put in the county psychiatric ward 4 times because I was out of my head. I lost 70 pounds in 3 months. Got put in jail again, possession, assault on a police officer, DUIs. Sitting in the jail cell there, I knew where I needed to get back to, and I wrote Mr. and Mrs. Harris a letter, and just asking if they could please take me back when I got out. I knew that's where I needed to be, because that's where I found a life before. That's where I found the discipline. That's where I found the structure. And that's where I knew that there would be people who were godly that would show me the example that I needed.
Welcome back to Unhooked, where we've been talking about relapse. I'm wondering, as a provider or a family member, how might we also be triggers to relapse and for someone who's been an addict?
So sometimes people think, well, I've cured my liquor problem. I don't drink anymore. I'm fine. But then they'll go to the doctor and the doctor will put them on pain medication. So in Lonnie's case, that's what happened. He had a legitimate pain, went to the doctor, and the doctor tried to help him feel better, put him on pain medicine, without really understanding addiction and the concept of relapse and how there can be mood-altering effects from pain medicine, sleeping pills, and nerve pills. So should they not get pain medicine? Well, it's something that has to be informed consent, should be mindful of the risk, maybe seek non-narcotic ways of dealing with pain, maybe accepting my limitations. Maybe pain is there for a reason. God gave it to me for a reason. Maybe I shouldn't try to do everything and be willing to ask for help and slow down and so forth. So that's one way that doctors can inadvertently contribute to an addiction problem. And remember, just because you were addicted to one thing doesn't mean you can't get or won't get addicted to something else.
Yeah. So, Dr. Brooks, the holidays, why would the holidays be a difficult time for someone trying to manage relapse?
Well, for a couple of reasons. You know, one thing about the holidays is that we have these great expectations about the holidays being the most wonderful time of the year, you know, where we spend time with our family and our friends. And a lot of times people who've experienced addictions may not have, you know, the best family support system or the best, you know, friendships. And so they start feeling sorry for themselves. They start feeling like, oh, you know, my life is terrible. You know, I don't have this, you know, Rockwell kind of family, and I maybe just need a drink to help myself feel better during this time.
Sure.
Or one drink is fine, you know, I just won't drink too much. So the family members might feel a little embarrassed, you know, that they can't drink, and so they'll encourage it. Well, you've been doing good, you could handle a drink, and yet just sips, even medications, cough medications with alcohol, can be enough of a trigger that puts you back in that. And some people, they can be off and running, others it might take longer, but you have to be very careful about that.
It sounds like something that can happen fairly quickly, that with one sip, you know, you can start your trajectory again in the addiction world. Is this something that's addressed in treatment in terms of the relapse issues that might occur for someone?
It varies. It should be addressed in treatment. So certainly I always encourage my patients to discuss a relapse prevention plan, have something written out. What if somebody shoves a drink in your face? What are you going to say? How are you going to feel about that? You're going to be embarrassed, you're going to be nervous, you're going to stammer, you're going to offer excuses, or you can just say, no, thank you. So I'll use the analogy. It's, if you were allergic to penicillin, you don't feel embarrassed about that. You just say, no thanks. Mm-hmm. And you're okay with that. Same thing with an alcohol drink or a pill. I have one patient that he's in recovery. He's one of our counselors. He still has neck pain, refuses to take any narcotics because he knows the risk.
Sure. Well, is there ever a time that perhaps the addict gets to a point where, you know, maybe they can not go to some of those meetings, and maybe they are doing pretty well, and, you know, they get a little confident? Is there ever a time where they can just sort of, you know, ease back on the intensity of their recovery?
That's a good question. But I think in general, humility is the best, you know, it's the best approach.
Sure.
You know, we all need supports in our lives, and some of us need more supports than others. You know, we all need to lead a balanced life. And if we failed in the past at, you know, being able to create that balanced life for ourselves, then I think it's important to put in place whatever you can to, you know, keep your life in focus. And I think a lot of the recovery groups help us do that, you know, give us a kind of mirror to show us, you know, where we are.
What are some of the positive things that they can put in their life you were mentioning? You know, earlier you were talking about some of the things about taking care of yourself. What are some things that might be really beneficial for someone to prevent a relapse?
I think it's important to have a meditation program, a time of the day, whenever that you're able to center yourself, get in touch with what's important, what your sources of strength are, be feeding your mind with something of value, some spiritual thought, something that you can carry with you. Time where you can let go of things that have been bothering you, that are piling up on you, and forgiveness, having a concept of forgiveness of yourself as well as others, so you're not carrying on resentments that build up. So the context doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be 12-step. Churches should provide everything that 12-step programs do. And the dose, it's like not everybody needs to take insulin. If you exercise and eat right, then your blood sugar is going to be controlled. So it's whatever it takes. If you need two meetings a day, or one meeting a day, or one a week, or as needed, it's whatever it takes. So being willing to do what it takes is the issue.
Yeah. Spiritually, how does the addict deal with their relationship with God? Because if they relapse, they always sort of think of themselves, man, can God accept me? Does God forgive me? You know, have I gone too far and I'm out of the, you know, out of the reach of God's grace?
Well, you know, God is a God who, I believe, specializes in forgiveness. He says, while we were yet sinners, he came to die for us. So he knows where we are, and we can never go too far for God to accept us back. So, you know, again, there's that humility, recognizing, hey, you know, I'm weak. I don't have control of anything, really, and recognizing that God can provide us with the strength that we need.
Wow. It's so true that we serve a God of great grace towards each and every one of us. So thank you so much, Dr. Brooks and Dr. Rass, for being with
thank
us.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it. You. All right. And Unhooked will be right back.
So they accepted me back into the program, and I was worried people weren't going to accept me, but they did. Everybody was glad to see me and welcomed me back, and that was a blessing in itself. That really started out this was my second time here on a good note, because it was tough coming back here. It wasn't easy, because I knew what I was going to have to face and what I did to those who cared about me. This time it was more heart work, working on my heart and getting a relationship with Jesus and learning scripture. Mr. Harris decided, the program now is 12 to 18 months, and he decided to keep me 23 months. And I told him, I said, whatever you think, I'm here to listen, and whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. Because I got to get it right this time. I don't have much time left. At that time, well, I turned 30 in the program and I turned 40 in the program. So I came back 10 years later and went through it again. I had almost a little over 4 years clean when I relapsed. I graduated in 2007. So I got 5 years clean now. So I've surpassed the other one. You may stay clean for a short period of time on your own, but until you accept God into your life and embrace Him and to accept that you're not in control, that God is, you're not going to stay clean. That's my experience. You know, I'm sitting here today because people didn't give up on me and they continued to pray for me. I'm not saying to enable them and bail them out and pay their bills and pay their fines and give them a place to live and all of that, because all that does is just keep them in their mess. But prayer works, because I'm sitting here talking to you today because my grandmother didn't give up on me, my mother didn't give up on me. And even though I put them through hell on earth, they kept praying for me. My name is Lonnie and I am Unhooked.
Hello, friends. We've learned some exciting information about how to prevent relapse. Relapse is one of the biggest challenges that addicts face, because it's so easy to go back to those things that we used to do to make us feel better. You know, there's one person that can make us feel better than anyone else, though, and that person is Jesus Christ. In his story, Lonnie told us that he found Jesus Christ. He found him as a comforter for his broken hearts and his wounds. He found him as someone strong who could give him victory. He found then that relapse is not inevitable. My name is Dr. David, and I've worked with many people as a clinical social worker and as a pastor. Many of them struggled with relapse, and one of the things that we've discovered is that when people go through good treatment programs and then relapse afterwards, It's because there are issues of pain and hurt that have not been addressed. Those things can be touched in your life now. Wherever you're hurting, whatever healing you need, Jesus is a wonderful comforter. Many times, children have not learned what to do with the pain that they experience either. And so they grow up hurting and get into all kinds of addictive practices. Children stuff the hurts that they experience with life. They don't know what else to do with the hurts that they've experienced in life. And so we're inviting even grown-up children today to take the lid off the garbage can of your heart, to let Jesus come into that place in your heart and become and begin to touch, to heal all the feelings that are there. You can trust Him with those feelings. You can trust Him even though you might be afraid of Him, afraid because you don't know that He can touch and heal you. I want to share with you today that from my experience, He is someone you can trust even with your deepest hurts and pains. For more information about how to break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. And for prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. Choose to become unhooked today.